What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the week six edition of the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Show here on RotoGrinders. I am Britt Devine, joined by my man, Mr. Ian Harditz, coming to you live from the Pro Football Focus HQ. Ian, drop some names. Who can you see over there?
I found a kitchen somewhere that I'm showing right now. I think the important folks got the studio. But yeah, actually was running by talking to Chris Collinsworth about the coffee machine yesterday. So always seeing someone interesting here in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, what's up, man? Glad to be back here for week six. Week five was fun, Ian. But we have all this data now. And usually I think we've talked about this a couple of times. 3 weeks, 2 weeks, we're always searching for this time when we can somewhat forget about 2020 and really focus on 2021.
We're here.
I think we've arrived to that. Yeah. The problem is everyone's hurt. So we'll have a lot of fun on this Friday show. I've mentioned it before. One of the fun things about doing the show on Friday is we actually get to talk about a lot of things that are happening in the injury world that you may not have heard on other shows. But we always start off with your mismatch manifesto on Pro Football Focus. If you guys want to read this, Ian lobbied with the guys over at PFF. It is free over there for the entire season. You can find that over on Pro Football Focus. If you want to get all the other cool stuff like grades, I like to read the utilization report from Dwayne the Rock McFarland. If you want access to all that other stuff, you do have to have a subscription, but Ian's article is free. We go over it over here. Ian, let's pretend some people are new to this show, either on YouTube or on the RotoGrinders podcast feed. Explain to the people what you do, and let's jump into week six, man.
Real simple. And if you follow me on Twitter and you see, you know, the conditionally formatted blue and red charts I send out every week, that's where the article gets all the information from. So basically, you know, when we talk about mismatches, it's always been something regardless of what company you work for, what stat you're looking at. It's the offense ranks X in this and the defense ranks Y in this. So basically, to remove the two-way street, I just combine the metrics so we can get these clean, conditionally formatted columns to help tell us, hey, here's where the mismatches could potentially be. As always, we got to add some context, though. That's where the article comes in. That's where Britt and I come in. So starting things off with the explosive plays, this week we really see one quarterback stand tall among the others in terms of expecting the ball out. That is Joe Burrow against a Lions secondary that just really hasn't been able to slow down anyone this year. So Burrow, we have started to see the pass play rate move up a little bit in neutral situation. That was the only problem in the early part of the year, man. Before Burrow got hurt last year, he was number one in dropbacks among everybody. I'm not saying he's getting all the way back there, but at least in this matchup with the efficiency we're expecting him to have, might not need 40 dropbacks to have a big day at the office. We also see Matthew Stafford, Kyler Murray, even Carson Wentz set up well enough as well. Maybe some guys that could be in trouble, Justin Fields easily standing out as the worst. I mean, until this Chicago offense gives us anything, I think the only guy we can really trust at this point is Khalil Herbert, just because of all the injuries that have happened there. I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit in the running back section. Also have Teddy Bridgewater and Baker Mayfield not looking great as well.
All right, let's keep scrolling down your article. Again, if you guys want to check this out and read it for your own, you can do that without a PFF subscription. Let's talk about pace. One of the most important things, plays per game, really factors into projection sets and fantasy points that you can, you know, targets, all that sort of fun stuff. One of the most important things in DFS when setting your lineups. It looks like we had one of the fastest projected paces. That was in last night's Tampa Bay at Philadelphia. What do we got on the Sunday slate? And I also want to note, things are a little different this week with the buys kicking in, and we still have London games. We've gone from 13 or 14 games on the main slate down to 10. So the ownership itself is going to get a little bit congested as we work through the plays later.
And we're also going to get all sorts of wind tweets on a Sunday morning from all of our weather experts, all of our meteorologists out there in the industry, because Cleveland is looking like around 20 miles per hour. I pointed this out on Twitter, and someone said that I had a dangerous, what I said was dangerous for saying it was going to be a wind week because it wasn't over 20 miles per hour. And I said, what are you talking about? I am seeing 20. Oh, they were seeing 19. So my bad, people. But just realize it is wind, not precipitation, we care about. The Cleveland game will be impacted by that. But back to pace. Rams-Giants is really the only other game standing out in terms of really a fast-paced matchup. There's some relative to this week, but in terms of just on the year as a whole, Rams-Giants is the only game I think that we should expect a little bit more, you know, play volume to happen to both sides, which, hey, with the Giants, man, we got Tony, we got returning Sterling Shepard, we got Devontae Booker expecting to see some snaps. I do think most people will be attacking the Rams side of the ball, but there are some reasonable bring back options, especially with Daniel Jones trending towards being able to play some of the slower paced games, Bengals and Lions, as well as the Texans and Colts. So, you know, I still think in these games, there are some options, but you know, when you see this slow of projected game pace, and particularly in like the Bengals case, as tempting as it might be for, you know, Burrow, Chase, Boyd, whoever you want to do there, I am worried with Joe Mixon expected to have his usual workload back, just how many times Burrow will be asked to drop back in 60 minutes.
Yeah, I want to, speaking of Joe Mixon, it looks like he popped up as a limited on the practice report, but we did get a beat writer a little while ago, right before the show, say he expects him to get his full workload. And I think Mixon, I think I got him down as one of my favorite tournament running backs this week, because I just don't think anyone's going to use him because it has turned into running back chalk week, in my opinion, with that Nick Chubb. And then we're all going to be playing Mr. Kareem Hunt, I think.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right now via NBC Sports Edge, formerly known as RotoWorld, that Mixon listed as questionable, but is firmly expected to play. And yeah, okay, Bengals coach Zach Taylor said Mixon will play, and they're listing him as questionable because why the hell not, I guess, right?
Yeah, let's keep scrolling down your article here. Let's talk about pressure rate. Maybe it'll help get your quarterback rattled. Maybe you might want to avoid him, or maybe we can find something here to help out the defensive selections, because those are always playing Russian roulette with defense. What do we got here, both positive and negative?
Two guys that really should have all day to throw, Matthew Stafford, again, and that kind of goes hand in hand with that Giants game we were talking about, and Justin Herbert, man. Like, I think this could be the week to really go in on Herbert, Mike Williams, and Keenan Allen. I see Keenan Allen getting some deserved hype. He has been a bit overdue for a blow-up, but Mike Williams, I think, is so expensive at this point that people aren't going to want to pay all the way up to get him, because there are some, you know, quote-unquote better, cheaper options. With that said, we know his upside in this offense. It's over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns each and every week. So if you want to differentiate that lineup, I mean, it costs you extra, but now with some of the RB value and Ricky Seals-Jones always chilling there at 3K, I do think if you want to pay up and get this expensive Charger stack, it could help differentiate that old lineup. And then with the pressure guys that could just be seeing more of it, Sam Darnold and Kirk Cousins not looking good, and also Teddy Bridgewater. Among these guys, I would say it's most problematic for Kirk Cousins. I think Justin Jefferson will get his no matter what, but we've seen Cousins this year has the fourth largest drop off in yards per attempt when kept clean versus when he's under pressure. So that's why him, and I think Tannehill is another guy kind of like this. I mean, they look great when they have all day to throw and they can really just survey the whole field from the pocket. Once you can get them off that spot, though, totally different quarterback.
I'm not a Titans believer this week. We'll talk about that in an upcoming segment as well. Continuing some of the topics in the mismatch manifesto. Yards before contact. This is running back, offensive line, something we can maybe glean into that. What are a couple good matchups? What are a couple bad matchups?
Chiefs and Ravens really standing out as having the top two run game matchups. And hey, again, with all these backup guys and Kareem Hunt surging ahead, going to guys like Latavius Murray and Darrell Williams might actually be a way to still get starters, guys that should be seeing probably somewhere close to 15 combined carries and targets at a little bit of a reduced ownership cost. So the Latavius angle, I think, is especially interesting because we saw the Chargers play the Browns, a complete run first offense last week, and really not change their entire philosophy of, hey, like, run the ball all you want. who else likes to do that? The Baltimore Ravens. So I do think Lamar and, to a lesser extent, Latavius Murray could have some big rushing lanes this week, just from a schematic point of view. And then guys that shouldn't really be seeing too many open lanes, Houston Texans, good. We don't want to worry about them anyway in fantasy land. And also the Raiders. I will say, though, man, for two straight weeks now, Josh Jacobs' usage has looked absolutely fantastic. He's had 18 and 20 combined carries and targets. And these are games with extreme negative game scripts. So we haven't always been able to assume that when things go south, Josh Jacobs will be able to get this many touches. We still have some boxes to check now in this post-Gruden offense. We aren't sure if it's going to be the same thing. And Peyton Barber could feasibly return and work his way into the committee as well. But so far, Jacobs' two biggest obstacles to that pass down role were their extremely highly paid backup running back Kenyon Drake and Jalen Richard, who returned last week. Now the guy had an impact on Jacobs' targets, which was great to see.
I do want to know if anyone out there read early on Friday that Jacobs was out of practice, because he wasn't in there. He did make a late appearance in practice just a few minutes ago. So if anyone was worried about that, Josh Jacobs does look like he is trending towards playing this week. Let's close this out, Ian. Oh, that's another thing. All the team grades at PFF, I misclicked. So maybe people got some sneak peek behind the paywall over there. Let's go to the passing game here. Any good offenses that might be a little under the radar for people to target in the passing game this week? Because this is really how tournaments are won.
Echoing the Rams and kind of Bengals having a good matchup that we've seen on some of these other stats. But the other kind of two, the Chargers against the Ravens defense, that I still think people are giving this Ravens secondary like a little more credit. They were arguably the best secondary in the league for the better part of the past 3 years. But you take away Peters, you take away Jimmy Smith. That's why Carson Wentz just threw for 400 yards on these guys. They're coming off a short week. Again, I really love the idea of looking away from probably a pretty chalky Austin Eckler, and even including him since he's so involved in that passing game, but really just honing in on this Chargers offense this week. And then also we are seeing the Houston Texans pop up a little bit. I don't think Davis Mills is going to throw for 300 plus and three touchdowns every week, but at a minimum in this post Tyrod offense, however much longer that's going to persist, I think we have enough of a decent enough, I should say, quarterback under center. So Brandon Cooks could be in a pretty nice bounce back spot here.
All right, I lied about closing it out. Let's do EPA per play. How did we do last week in this? What's the running total when we get to two positive teams? Is this still a trend we should be looking at?
It's doing well, like anything, you know, use it as part of the puzzle, not the entire thing. But yeah, so when you pick the team as the underdog, but they're expected to have the better offensive matchup against the spread, it's been 6-4-1. Straight up though, and obviously we're getting the extra points on the money line there, it has been 6-5. So this week's group, we got the Panthers sitting as a 1-point underdog. I'm not sure if that's going to move any more with the McCaffrey news. Probably shouldn't, but you know, these things happen from time to time. I don't love that one. The Vikings are just kind of a hard team to really get behind. The Chargers plus 3, though, man, I just think that this is more based on like the Chargers are going to charger than actually looking at the Chargers versus the Ravens this year. I feel like the Chargers are the better team on both sides of the ball. When I saw that earlier this week, I immediately pounded their money line. And hey, if you want the points, that's fine too. More on that here in just a second. And also the Cardinals sitting at plus 3 against the Browns stand out as a battle, I think, we should be potentially getting behind. Baker versus Kyler, man, I think it leans pretty damn favorably in Kyler's favor. And just looking at, you know, this Browns defense, yeah, they're great. We saw that against, you know, Justin Fields and company. But then we also saw last week against the Chargers, not exactly the sort of shutdown unit that can just take a really good offense out of the picture. So if it becomes a shootout between the Cardinals and the Browns, then yeah, we got the win to worry about. But no, Nick Chubb could also impact, hey, if any running backs are going to make any sort of impact, it could be guys like Chubb and McCaffrey. And I think the Cardinals getting 3 while being the better overall team is an interesting situation I'm interested in. Then also the Seahawks, but obviously with the change from Russ to Geno, that's something I'm staying away from.
Yeah, you got the two teams. I always like to bet a couple live dogs. We're going to get to the betting stuff in just a second. They didn't make my list, but you can. The Cardinals and Chargers are definitely the two live dogs of the week if you're trying to bet that. All right, that's going to do it for the recap of the Mismatch Manifesto. Again, if you want to read that over on Pro Football Focus, it is free each and every week, thanks to Ian battling it out with the suits over at PFF. And then if you want any of the other cool stuff over there, like the grades or to read Dwayne's Context Matters,
yes,
the sheet he does there, that is one of the top-notch things. I read that every week, along with everything else you get over at PFF, if you're interested. All right, let's jump into some of the sports betting stuff, because Ian, after a horrific start, I have been pounding it to the books over the past couple of weeks and have clawed my way back into a positive season here. I'm looking to keep it rolling here. I'm playing the favorites this week. I mentioned if you want to play the dogs, the Chargers, Cardinals, you can take the money line on them. I think they almost should be favorites. The Cardinals, maybe a little worrisome. You get Kyler Murray with the dinged wing, and he doesn't start running, and it just affects the offense a little bit, maybe a little bit worrisome, but I still think they're the better team for sure. But I'm playing the favorites. The first one for me is the Packers is 5.5 against the Bears. Now, I got you with the Bears last week against the Raiders because I didn't believe in the Raiders. Well, guess what? Ian, this week I don't believe in the Bears. So the Packers are just a better team. I know the Packers are dealing with a lot of injuries here, but this Bears offense is atrocious. They don't want to do anything with it. They want to run the ball like 30, 40 times a game. With Khalil Herbert, I don't know if that's really going to work against the Packers. No, it might, because the Packers stink against the run. Yeah. But newsflash, Aaron Rodgers is going to put up points against the Chicago Bears. And when you're down 10 and you're trying to run, it's just really not going to work too well. Unless they unleash Justin Fields and Allen Robinson is somehow getting 15 targets a game like he was last year, instead of getting whatever low amount he's this year, I think the Packers cover that 5.5 pretty easily. The strangest line of the week to me is the Cowboys, because I bet this at 4 on Monday. I get to the book early. I think this is going to be like 6 by the time the Sunday comes around, and it's gone the other way against me. It's a 3.5 right now. I still think this is one of the best lines of the week. I don't know how the Patriots score enough points to really compete with this high-powered Cowboys offense. And then when the Cowboys get up, they just grind the game away, right, with Zeke and Pollard, and their offense is so good. I just don't know how the Patriots keep pace with them in this game. They're going to need multiple turnover advantage or some really fluky plays, I think, to be able to keep pace with that Cowboys offense. So I got that one as well. And then the other one, here's one that worked for me. I got the Bills -4 on Monday. It's now -5.5 against the Titans. This is just pretty easy. The Titans defense is absolutely atrocious, and the Bills offense, newsflash, is really good. So this doesn't really take a lot of sensing what's happening here. I think they're going to be able to get after Tannehill. I think Tannehill, even though he's got Julio Jones and AJ Brown back, I don't know, this isn't going to be the Derrick Henry game. Now, of course, we don't get to use him on the main slate, but in showdowns and things like that, maybe it'll work out. But I just think the Bills are the far superior team, and it's 5.5. That's a decent amount to lay, but I think they win this game by a touchdown pretty easily. And then to reiterate, Chargers, Cardinals, as live dogs, if you like those sort of things. That's where I stand, Ian. What are you looking at the books this week?
Well, I haven't been on quite as big of a tear as you, but I also dug a bigger hole to start the year. So slowly but surely, coming off the 2-1 week, we are at 5-10. Don't let them get hot, people. Right now, I have a money line parlay going on. We got the first one down. Bucks, Bengals, Cowboys, Bills. If you wanted to roll the Bengals over the Lions, the Cowboys and the Bills to complete that, you could still get pretty solid odds there. I'm with you on the Cowboys against the Patriots, and I'm fine taking that -3, -3.5, whatever. I just think this Patriots team, like, they're getting too big of a bump for playing the Buccaneers pretty competitively in a primetime game. It was a weird game. I think if they played 10 times, like, that might be the closest that game ends up being. If you just look at them this year, they lose to the Dolphins in week 1. They beat Zach Wilson, and they end up beating Davis Mills in a game that was entirely, too close. So, you know, maybe their O-lines could be a little bit healthier this week, but I just don't know, even with a healthy O-line, what the ceiling on this offense is. Mac Jones so far is like the single worst deep ball passer in the game. And like, Trayvon Diggs is a game time decision. I can see a path to the Patriots not being blown the hell out, but either way, I think 3, even 3.5 is just far too low on this. I talked about the Chargers again. I'm in on the money line there. I just think they're better than the Ravens each and every way around. And you can say, we gotta go from West Coast to, you know, all the way out in Baltimore. Baltimore's also coming off the short week in that Monday night game that went into overtime. You know, you could make the coming off a big emotional win storyline if you wanted to as well. And then finally, I think the Giants at +9 just seems a bit extreme. Man, they're home. We do have the LA going all the way to New York storyline going there. And, you know, the Rams, after they got that Buccaneers win, it was like, whoa, like, we might be looking at the best overall team in football here, potentially. Not so much over the last 2 weeks. Disappointing loss to the Cardinals. And then even in that Seattle game, like, it was way too close with Russ barely playing in the second half, I think, for comfort there. So Giants, we got Daniel Jones coming back, who's been playing great this year. Like, it sucks he got concussed immediately against the Cowboys. Cowboys. But if you take that one out of the picture, I think the Giants are a good enough team to at least keep this one within a touchdown. I certainly think the Rams will win, but I think the Giants at home as 9 points, that's just too high for me.
Yeah, a couple others. You mentioned the Rams almost, you know, not really beating the Seahawks. The Seahawks are really garbage, and I don't really like the Steelers, but I think they're going to win pretty handily against Seattle this week. And the Chiefs with all – like Washington is just falling apart at the seams on Friday's practice. You got McLaurin with a hamstring injury. That sounds pretty not great for his ability to play on Sunday if he shows up on the Friday practice with that. You've got Antonio Gibson still dealing with his shin. If Ricky Seals-Jones is the number one target, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep pace against Patrick Mahomes this week. So I do like the Chiefs is, I think it was at 6.5, and maybe it's moved with all that news. But I do like the Chiefs as well here. I just like the favorites quite a bit this week. I think they all cover pretty easily. All right, before we get into some DFS position chatter, I need to tell you guys about Jock Market. Stop throwing your money away and check out Jock Market. It's the app where daily fantasy becomes a stock exchange. Buy and sell shares of players in real time for real money. Download now for a 100% deposit match up to $50 using promo code GRINDERS. And get this, if you happen to lose money in your first market on Jock Market, they will cover your expenses up to $100 on your first play. So what you would do with that, I played this a couple of times too. It's fun. Deposit your $50, use promo code GRINDERS. You get the $100. Try to take a couple of long shots, because if you lose that 100 and you're a first time customer or player, they will cover your losses, and you could turn 100 into 500, 600 pretty easily on Jock Market if you pick the right players. It's a fun little game. Go check it out and use promo code GRINDERS. All right. I hate when it's like the super chalk week, Ian, and it's really, really the lineup almost makes itself for a couple of reasons. I guess I'll start from the top down. The first thing you have is we had the Ravens offensive explosion on Monday night. So that didn't get factored into their salaries this week. So you've got Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, and Marquise Brown, all relatively cheap. And then we've got all these injuries popping up later in the week, so those salaries are not accounted for. Then you've got a 3K tight end that plays every snap and might be the number one target for Washington this week. So cash games, there's still an edge because so many people play NFL, but at least in the higher stakes, the edge is going to be pretty thin, and it's definitely going to be a little thinner as you work your way down the buy-ins this week, particularly because, like, at quarterback, it was Heinicke and it was Lamar, and if Terry McLaurin's out and Antonio Gibson is still a little banged up, I don't know if I'm going to trust in Heinicke to be able to get some extra money to play those high-priced wide receivers and things like that. So it just really looks like Lamar Jackson in cash week. He's too cheap on all the sites. He had the big blow-up game. I know the Chargers, they really limit those deep plays, which is that is the Lamar Jackson game plan when he throws the ball. It's chuck it deep to Marquise Brown, hit a couple big plays to Mark Andrews, but I still think they're going to find a way to get it done. I don't know about Latavius Murray because he looks like total garbage. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more. But Lamar Jackson, he's going to get his rushing. The floor is so high. The ceiling's even higher. Maybe the ceiling game might not be there against his Chargers defense, but you know that floor is going to be there. So, sort of like Jalen Hurts. Come hell or high water, Lamar Jackson's going to get there. He's just too cheap given his recent performances.
Yeah, And again, we talked about the Chargers before. If they would have adjusted more to the Browns' run-first offense, I would be wondering if this could be a trap game of sorts for Lamar. But they didn't. So, it is nice we do this on Fridays. I record my DFS episode of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast on Thursdays. And I went through this, great cash game segment where we were mostly building around Taylor Heinicke. But you take away Terry McLaurin from that equation, you give a lot more value at running back. And all of a sudden, let's just go up and get to Lamar Jackson. I guess the question after that, though, is who do we want to exactly stack him with? Do we just want to go naked with it? Or Hollywood Brown, I think, is more than affordable at 5,900. And even Mark Andrews, man, I know it's Kelsey or RSJ week, but the fact that Mark Andrews is only sitting there at, 5,200 on DraftKings, the Chargers, I think they used Derwin James differently this year. He was such a great tight end stopper his first year. And Brandon Staley said it, he plays five different positions for them. So this isn't a slight on Derwin James, it's just a reality. They've been the league's worst defense in fantasy points per game allowed to tight ends so far this year. So Andrews, Hollywood, Lamar, I'm not saying you need to stack all them together, but they're certainly all getting that Monday night discount as you brought it up. with the GPP side of things, I mean, I think that's where our conversation will be a little more interesting this week. Again, love the idea of going with Justin Herbert, getting Keenan Allen, hopefully Mike Williams. The guy hasn't been able to practice all week. I've got the impression that it just seems to be more rest than anything, but we'll see what the final injury designation says. If Mike is out, I would say my favorite QB two wide receiver tournament stack. How about a little Sam Darnold, DJ Moore, and Robbie Anderson? Mm-hmm. You know, I've been calling for that squeaky wheel Robbie spot for the last 2 weeks now. Haven't gotten the production yet, but he does have, I believe, 18 or 19 targets combined during that stretch. Once again, Christian McCaffrey is going to be sidelined. I think Chuba will get a lot of rightful ownership enhancement because of that. So maybe going away to this passing game that, let's face it, as long as they can just give Darnold some semblance of time in that pocket, not a guarantee. We talked about the pressure issues before, but I think anybody, particularly receivers as good as DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, can torch Patrick Peterson and Bashaud Breeland.
News alert, bing, bing, whatever noise you want to make. Mike Williams not at practice on Friday. So he has three straight did not practice. That just happened a couple of minutes ago. So during the portion open to the media, he was not there. We'll have to see if he suits up. If Mike Williams isn't in there now, he's expensive. So I think a lot of people were going to play Herbert to Eckler to Keenan Allen and maybe mix in the tight ends, because Williams is just super expensive. If he's out, does that change your thought on the stack at all? Or are we just kind of sort of rotating in Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler types?
I mean, it gives us the potential to go all the way down to like Jalen Guyton and Josh Palmer if we want to get real funky with it. But yeah, I think more than anything, it's just Eckler and Keenan become guys that we might want to just really try to squeeze in to the cash game spot. We'll see, man. I feel like the Chargers in the past have done this with Keenan and guys. Like, for other teams, a full week of DMP is like, yeah, this guy's not playing before, but I could see a scenario with the Chargers where it happens. Like, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen didn't practice all week, and they're not even listed on the injury report. So, not good. I wish he would have been out there. Let's see what the final designation says.
All right. And then one, my Hail Mary, I guess, in tournaments this week is going to be Carson Wentz. He's at home in a dome against the Houston Texans. I don't know if I really need to get much more in depth than that. Now, it didn't really work out for the Patriots last week, but Wentz has a little, he's like sneaky. He'll get a little rushing yards. If they get down on like the one or the two, like, what are they doing not giving Jonathan Taylor like 80% of the work? And they're still mixing in Marlon Mack way too much. But JT is going to get some ownership, but Wentz in the passing game. And the thing I like about Wentz is if T.Y. Hilton doesn't play, it's very easy. Like, I think you just play Wentz with Michael Pittman, and I think you can stack him with either Hines or Jonathan Taylor pretty easily. And you run it back with Brandon Cooks, or pick a irrelevant Texans wide receiver that had a good game last week and really pray. But the stack really does seem to make itself. He's very cheap and allows you to maybe get up to some higher priced players elsewhere. So that's my one GPP Hail Mary. And I was on board with you with Herbert. And I think Herbert maybe even becomes more interesting if Mike Williams doesn't play, because then you're not forced to spend 8,100 DraftKings fantasy dollars on a guy he's just very expensive now. So it makes stacking a little bit easier. And I think that might even bump up Herbert's ownership just a little bit. Let's jump to running backs. And I guess this is where I think we've got a couple really chalky plays for cash games this week. Everyone with the Nick Chubb news is going to play Kareem Hunt. And I tweeted out something from StatMuse earlier where Kareem Hunt in games without Nick Chubb for the Browns has actually been a pretty horrific fantasy play. That was more in jest. We were talking about this pre-show. Why don't you go over what happened in some of those games? We do have D'Ernest Johnson, who probably will get, 20 to 30% of the overall touches. You don't think so? I don't know, maybe like 10 to 15%, but we're going to see a lot of work from Kareem Hunt here. Just go over what sort of happened in those games and why he should be such a smash play this week.
So with D'Ernest this year, he's actually like, maybe they consider him the more the backup for Nick Chubb, but they've actually liked Felton a little bit more, their rookie running back. Some people, Demetri Felton, he's like a wide receiver running back kind of hybrid. So again, I wouldn't be shocked if we end up seeing D'Ernest get the carries. Felton doesn't have a carry this year, but he does have 6 catches and he's looked pretty good with them. So gun to my head, I'd actually prefer Felton over D'Ernest Johnson, but I just think it's going to be the Kareem Hunt show. That's basically what it was last year when you zoom in a little bit more on the game. So Nick Chubb gets hurt in that week four game against the Cowboys when OBJ went completely nuts. But what a lot of people forget is that Kareem Hunt entered that game questionable as a game time decision himself with a calf injury, I believe. So it was a groin injury. Okay, so week five comes along. He plays 70% of snaps. Not great. Again, groin injury playing a factor. Still gets 24 combined carries and targets. Week six comes along. Only 16 combined. They lost this game 38-7, the Steelers. The starters were pulled, not even in the fourth quarter, late third quarter. That's how bad of a beatdown it was. What happens after that? 22 combined carries and targets, 17 combined on 90%, 86% snap rates. I believe the last game was one of like three straight just weather meltdowns the Browns had to deal with as well. So I know it's easy to just take the four-game game log and look at it and say, oh, Kareem Hunt was more of like an upside running back too. What's the big fuss about that 90% usage for him? If he gets it in this version of the Browns offense, man, in a reasonable matchup, like he's my RB4 on the week and season long. I don't think there is a single start sit question that he can get away from. And then when we look at the price in hand, it was already kind of curious he was this cheap, man. He's been just objectively better than Nick Chubb this year. And it's nothing against Nick Chubb. They're both top 10 running backs. It's ridiculous they're on the same team. But to see Hunt already in the low six point, in that low 6K range, even before the injury, I thought was interesting. So just based on this projected workload, which again, true 80-90% in a great offense at home against a bad run defense, I don't think it's a trap, man. I think we got to get behind Kareem Hunt everywhere.
All right, a couple other running backs that are probably going to play almost every snap. First is going to be Daryl Henderson. If he can stay out of the blue tent, he should have a massive game here against the Giants. On his couple of trips in to the tent, Sony Michel will grab a couple of carries, but Daryl Henderson looks really good. And with the CMC news, I know you have Chuba Hubbard in here. Talk about what happened between him in 2 weeks ago and then what happened last week, because when we all played him in DFS, we got the outcome we didn't want, and then we got off of him. He had the outcome we did want. What can we expect out of him this week? These are two guys who should be in on just about every snap this week.
Yeah, he's due for some positive touchdown. I guess we can just say due for some touchdown regression in this one. The only Chase Edmonds has more overall touches this year without a score than Chuba. So yeah, 2 weeks ago, they play the Cowboys and we don't get the every down roll because Dallas really, you know, took advantage of a couple third quarter interceptions and blew that game open. We still saw 15 combined carries and targets, but people kind of got off Chuba as this Mike Davis light one for one replacement from McCaffrey. What happened last week? In a game that, you know, you were right, Britt, the Eagles won. Kudos to you for calling that. Yeah, you know,
a win's a win.
I was going to say, you know, I must have missed the part where you talked about how they were going to win on a blocked punt late in the fourth quarter. But win is a win, as you said. I'm not bitter at all. Couldn't be me. But anyway, in this game, Chuba, 5 catches, 24 carries, ended up getting himself 134 total yards. So I'm not worried about this Vikings defense any more than I would be the Eagles one that I just had plenty of success with. And again, we should see the same exact usage because they released Rodney Smith this week, I think in anticipation of McCaffrey coming back. So it might have actually been a downgrade for CMC. I'm not really sure with the COVID protocols they have, if they could even re-sign Rodney like in this amount of time and get him back ready to go by Sunday. So assuming that it's just Chuba and Royce Freeman active this week, I think Chuba, I think Henderson, and I think Hunt, you'd have a hard time getting away from these guys in cash games. I will say though, man, like if you want to just keep going down, the cheapest one of these, you know, newfound starting running backs we can get to is Khalil Herbert at 4,600. Home dog against the Packers. I get it. I'm not really trusting this Bears offense to do that much, but similar thing as Devontae Booker, who, you know, costs 800 more. Like, I'd much rather play Herbert there because they're both in projected rough spots, but they are at home and they should see 15 to 20 combined carries and targets. You know, unless you're like 2019 Kalen Ballage, it's pretty hard to bust on those sort of numbers.
You like going down on prices. I sort of like laddering up a little bit to Dalvin Cook is just 7,700. And he looks like he's off the injury report. Good to go. That signals Dalvin Cook 80% plus of the touches, in my opinion, this week. He's 7,700 on DraftKings. To me, he's like, maybe in yesteryear, he's like a 9K DraftKings player, but he's at least an $8,500 player when he's fully healthy and expected to get a full workload this week. He's 7,700. He's probably the spend up I like if you're going that way. For tournaments, there's a couple of guys I mentioned earlier in the show, Joe Mixon. If Alexander, I think Alexander Mattison's pretty good. I think Joe Mixon is like, I don't know. Do running backs really matter? If Alexander Mattison can go bananas against the Lions, why can't Joe Mixon, right? You know, that's what the Bengals want to do in theory, is because they still want to hide Joe Burrow. They don't want him to get injured. They don't want him to have any issues or anything like that. Why can't he go bananas against the Lions this week? And if the coach says he's ready to go and get his full workload, I'm expecting to see those first couple weeks of workload from Joe Mixon where he almost doesn't come off the field. I think he's a really good play in a tournament. This mid-tier is absolutely fantastic this week. And then one guy who we only have projected at about 5%, which will probably go down even more once the Kareem Hunt news gets factored into things like that, is Ezekiel Elliott. Dude, the Cowboys, I've mentioned this three or four times in the show this year, they want to run the ball, and they want to run the ball with Zeke once they have a lead. And I think they're going to be able to pound on the Patriots, put up a ton of points. They've got the number one run blocking unit in all of PFF grades, at least on the team grades. They want to run. He's in line for 20 plus touches, in my opinion. No one's going to be using him. Easy 100 yards, two touchdowns is certainly on the possibilities of things he can do. And if no one's going to be using him, I like Zeke in tournaments. Just if everyone's going to be playing Hunt, Hunt's going to be probably the highest owned player we've seen this season in large field tournaments when you factor in things like the bye week and then just the performance he should have. But if you can sort of switch it up a little bit somewhere in tournaments to a couple of these other mid tiers, or get Dalvin or play one of those cheapies, you got Darrell Williams in there as well. Like, you can make some fun rosters this week in tournaments. So just you don't have to pound in the ultra high on running backs. Don't be afraid to mix it up. I think you're on Mixon too. You got a couple other fun names as well.
Yeah, but no, I think the process that you're going through is exactly right. And it's what I'm sticking to with these guys. We have Hunt, we have Henderson, like even Swift, I think, is going to be fetching a good amount of ownership here. So yeah, go up to Mixon. Don't be afraid to go down to Josh Jacobs. It's not the most ideal matchup in Denver, but like, what do we see with running backs, man? If you can get 15 to 20 touches per game, you can find your way into the end zone once or twice and clear that century mark. So matchups, while important, when we can get this big of an edge off the chalk in tournaments, I do think it's worth looking at. And also what we see in the pressure rate stuff, like Teddy Bridgewater could be in for a long afternoon. I like the idea of stacking Jacobs with that Raiders defense. And then with Chuba sitting there at 5,900, I think he can go down to Latavius potentially. Like, again, he still is the number one back, but they were in a big hole against the Colts and they had to throw the hell out of the ball. I got a real galaxy brain one for you though here, Britt. J.D. McKissick all the way down at 4,800. Gibson is listed as questionable. I'm expecting him to play, but like, this idea that these scat backs don't have upside, I don't really think is true. If you look at McKissick's finishes this year, week one, RB77, week two, RB7, week three, RB46, week four, RB14, week five, RB68, even number weeks, man, JD McKissick goes off. Fantasy football doesn't need to be that hard. But even going back the second half of last year, this dude had like 4 to 5 top 12 finishes down that stretch. So if Terry McLaurin's out of the picture, like, who else are they going to throw the ball to? Curtis Samuel's out. We could actually see McKissick get back to working as a true wide receiver like he did for large portions of last season. So everyone wants this Chiefs Washington game, and how do we expect it to go? Probably the Chiefs getting up a lot, Washington having to play comeback. Well, McKissick's the guy that's on the field when they're doing that. So everyone wants RSJ and stuff, but McKissick could be the one where when we see his game log, you know, on Sunday night, we're saying, why would you throw the ball 13 times to JD McKissick? Could be one of those kind of weeks.
I know a lot of you guys out there listen to this, or, you know, on the Roto Grinders podcast feed, or watch it on demand later. If you are on YouTube watching it, please like and subscribe. It helps other people find it. And if you are watching this live, don't forget, we have a lot of cool shows on the Roto Grinders podcast feed. You can go check that out if you want to subscribe to that. Everything's delivered right to your phone. You don't have to find it. It's just delivered right to you. You can catch everything on demand. All right, let's get into wide receivers. And I think wide receivers are the spot where you're going to get a little difference. But the problem, at least in cash games, is if you plug in all the players we already mentioned that are going to be super high owned, you're left with a very distinct salary range to work in, which is this five to mid to high 6K range to really fill out your rosters with good players. You can also, there's a couple 4K receivers I think you can mix it up with. Going any cheaper than that does look a little dicey. So like the Michael Pittmans, right, who's definitely the alpha wide receiver going up against the Texans. I mean, he's good. Like, it seems like a lock. He should get double digit fantasy points. I think he's a reasonable play. You've got Marquise Brown. I think Pittman's 5,500. Marquise Brown's 5,900. And like his game doesn't really fit against the Chargers defensive plan. But like, you got to think coordinators are smart enough to realize maybe we can't get 25 yard passes to Marquise Brown. Let's cross him along the field and let him use his speed to separate that way. Maybe I think he should be able to do a pretty good PPR game at 5,900. You got T. Higgins, right? And we know Ja'Marr Chase is getting all these touchdowns, but it looks like Tyler Boyd's probably the odd man out when everyone's healthy on Cincinnati so far this year. And Higgins is just, he's a reasonable price tag in that mid $5,000 range. That's sort of where everything's sort of coming into me. I think if Mike Williams is out, I think Keenan Allen's going to be reasonably popular too. His price is just low enough where you can reach for someone like him. You've got Amon-Ra St. Brown for the Lions. He's 4,200. That's probably the cheap guy I might be interested in. Back-to-back games with eight targets. Cephas is out now. Hockenson's still not 100%. They're going to have to pass. They can't dump every ball off to DeAndre Swift. So I think he looks like he's probably going to be the number one wide receiver until Tyrell Williams comes back from a concussion. If he ever does come back, seems like that last concussion hit him pretty good. But I'm just finding myself, Ian, just like when you plug in all the other chalk plays, this is the tier I'm really focusing in on wide receivers this week. You got Brandon Cooks. There's a couple other guys, Jacoby Myers, but I don't know. I want a guy who can get a touchdown, so he doesn't really make my list. I don't know. This is just where I'm sort of landing this week.
Yeah, man, it is that range. You can go down. You mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown. I even think Rondale Moore is someone we could put in cash lineups this week and feel pretty good about. I was hoping that this four wide receiver offense was going to become the full-time thing, but with the Zach Ertz trade, probably won't be more than this week. But if anything, like them bringing in Ertz, who is not playing in this, he's not playing two games in 1 week. You're not allowed to do that. Without that, like they should lean on four wide receiver sets. They already do them more than anyone else in the league. The thing is, you know, the most frequently used four wide receiver set offense still only does it in like 20-25% of their snaps. So we have Rondale getting more rush attempts while Chase Edmonds is banged up with a shoulder injury. And last week, just in terms of pure usage, regardless of four wide receiver sets, he was finally starting to eat into some of Christian Kirk's reps as well. So it's just all about how you feel with it. If you want to go with Pittman, Jacoby, and maybe try to go up to Hollywood Brown, that's fine. But if you really want to try to get up more into that upper 6K range, or even the 7K range, I do think going down to someone like Rondale or Amon-Ra St. Brown is probably your best bet way to do it. But yeah, I think more than anything, like Hollywood would be the one guy I want to try to get in there. 80 plus yards and or a touchdown in 12 of his last 13 games. Like he has the two drops and everyone's like, what if he didn't drop those balls, man? We'd be looking at like a legit top five receiver at this point in fantasy land. So I know he did, but it's almost like the Tannehill factor where like every time these guys have like even an average week, we're like, oh, okay, the jig's up. They're back to being the guy we thought they were. And Hollywood Brown's just been a great receiver really for almost an entire season's worth of games now. So I'm not afraid to do that and take that Monday night discount. In terms of tournaments, maybe, just maybe, DeAndre Hopkins finally gets the blow up week. He did return to practice this time. And the bigger issue with the Cardinals, like I know their targets have been much closer than we've seen in past years, but we also just haven't seen a game yet where Kyler has had to really throw the hell out of the ball. The Vikings game was really their only close one that was somewhat back and forth. But even then, the Cardinals kind of jumped out in front. We do have Kyler popping up on the injury report with a shoulder injury. As we remember last year when he was dealing with that, it did force him to run the ball much less. So I think Hopkins and Rondale as well make sense in a game where people will be a lot more into it if there wasn't that win to worry about. Also, Robbie Anderson mentioned him before in the Sam Darnold potential stack. And one guy I think you like as well, Odell Beckham, with everyone just saying, hey, he's done. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, I do put my phone grinder hat on every now and then while I'm chilling here at the PFF headquarters. And I went back in that Chargers game and counted no fewer than four times when this dude was breaking open downfield. What'd they talk about during the week? You know, Beckham, he's like, yeah, of course I want the ball more, but happy to be winning. And Baker complimented his run blocking, which, you know, it's sad that we have to talk about OBJ's run blocking. That's what we've been reduced to. But truly, this guy is going out there. Like, there's no diva-ness like going on right now. This dude is going out there doing his job, and he's their number one receiver, clear cut, as long as Landry remains sidelined. So it's been ugly that we haven't gotten the freaking five potential touchdowns or whatever it is over the past 2 weeks to come to fruition. But maybe, just maybe, as soon as everyone is fully off him, this is when it finally comes together for OBJ.
Yeah, I wrote down my exact words. He's pissed enough people off to be viable this week, because exactly. People used him in cash 2 weeks ago. Then he was a semi-fringe play last week, and it just hasn't worked. And that's when you want to sort of jump on these guys, when the salary goes down and people are pissed off. Though if the wind wasn't there, it would make a little bit more sense. But it's even better leverage, because everyone's going to Kareem Hunt this week in tournaments. So that gives you some real extreme leverage if it's Odell Beckham that happens to find the end zone for the Browns this week. A couple other ones, the Rams passing game, you mentioned it in, you know, and some of your stuff from your article earlier in the show. If you play Woods or Kupp, you're, you know, with Matt Stafford, right, you're getting extreme. I think Daryl Henderson should be one of the more chalky running backs. So you're getting some leverage off of them if they happen to be the ones that get into the end zone. And the same, Justin Jefferson just does it every single week, puts up, he could literally have a 40 point fantasy game at any point in the season for sure, if he happens to get two touchdowns, 10 targets and things like that. And if Dalvin Cook does become reasonably popular, you can play him. And Adam Thielen's price is cheap, and maybe he was dinged up a little bit, but he likes to catch touchdowns, and touchdowns count for fantasy points. Last I checked on DraftKings, you get a point for the catch and six for the touchdown. You get two of those, you don't need many yards to have yourself a good game. So the Vikings receivers have been a staple point of me talking about them in tournaments all season, and they just never get enough ownership. And I think you can use both of them again this week for some leverage. All right. Before we talk about tight ends and wrap up the show, I want to let you guys know about RotoGrinders Premium. We talk about ownership. If you want to get access to that, if you want to know who's going to be used, who's not going to be, we have that here. If you want to get access to Lineup HQ, you don't want to I still hand build like 20 lineups a week, Ian. It's a pain in the butt sometimes. If you just want to click a couple of buttons and you want to use Lineup HQ to do that, you can do that along with all the articles. My Millionaire Maker article, I just released the week 5 recap earlier in the week that went over the first 5 weeks, along with how ownership trends move up and down during bye week. So there's access to that, along with a lot of other things. You can get that at RotoGrinders with Premium. If you want the whole package, we have that. If you just play NFL, we have access to just an NFL version as well. So make sure to check that out. All right, let's go to tight ends for cash, Ian. And like, it's just tight ends. It's horrible this week. And I know Travis Kelce's 7,000, which is, I believe, his lowest. Let's see here.
It is.
Yeah, he was 7,300. But dude, I don't have $7,000 for Travis Kelce, because there's two better volume plays, I think, this week. And it's Mark Andrews at 5,200, who, if you're spending up, he looks really juicy because he didn't get that price bump. If the price bump was factored in, he'd probably be, I don't know, probably priced just like Darren Waller at 6,600 this week. But the one that's really eyeing me on DraftKings, whenever you can get the cheap tight end that's, you know, gets a lot of targets, that actually is on the field, that runs routes, that gets end zone targets. This is not Evan Ingram. This is Ricky Seals-Jones. And we sort of liked Ricky Seals-Jones over Evan Ingram last week. And with all these injuries going on, possibly in Washington, with McLaren popping up on the injury report on Friday with a hamstring, that is not good. Ricky Seals-Jones might be the focal point if your boy JD McKissick doesn't come through. He's just 3K. He should be like if ownership was factored into what he's going to be owned this week, and like the Terry McLaurin injury, if he happens to sit, was factored, he'd be like a $45 to $5,000 tight end on DraftKings. He's 3K. And that's just what really makes the rest of your lineup look good. It's going to be a very chalky week, because I basically laid out the lineup for you. That's going to be super popular over the course of the show, but that's what happens on some of the bye weeks. And it looks like RSJ is probably my preferred option.
I mean, RSJ, I know he's had some past, like, he's, you know, we've been doing this for a while, Britt. We've seen an RSJ week before where he's elevated to a alleged starting role, and then he busts when everyone gets behind him. But people, he's had this, you know, weird little clique of fantasy analysts that like him because he's a converted wide receiver that looks like one when they throw him the ball. So he's already made like two handfuls of really good plays throughout this year. He had a good 40-yard catch and run nullified last week just on an illegal man downfield penalty that unfortunately didn't do him any favors there. But they are giving him a true every down role. Like we're talking 99% snaps. Logan Thomas got hurt and they just said, you know what? Next guy up, RSJ, you go be Logan Thomas. So at 3K, man, the way the cash lineups are setting up, I do think it makes the most sense to probably go down to him. It hurts not having Kelsey, but we want these running backs. We want Lamar. We can save some cash on defense by going with the Lions at home against the Bengals. But then it's like, do you want to have this, again, group of 5K wide receivers where we go down to one of Amon-Ra or Rondale to try to get up a little bit? Or do you want to be able to have like DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and then one of the 5K wide receivers? Right now, I'm leaning towards trying to save money with RSJ to get up elsewhere at wideout. It gets a little more interesting in tournaments. Again, we talked about Andrew being mispriced. We talked about Kelsey being mispriced. And I also think Noah Fant is someone that we should be willing to go back the well with. Alberto remains on the injury reserve list with the hamstring injury. And even though Fant's production wasn't great, as Dwayne McFarlane and myself talked about on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, his usage numbers were at an all-time best. So I still think Noah Fant is a plus tight end, awfully talented in his own right from a real-life perspective. And that's just 4,800 at home against the Raiders. I think he could be the guy that could swing a tournament if he could find his way into the end zone once or twice.
Yeah, just tight end is pretty gross this week. Like you have the, I think Kelsey, Andrews, RSJ will probably make up like almost half of all tournament teams.
When I did my original cash lineup yesterday before we got, you know, the Kareem Hunt news and all this, I had RSJ as my tight end and Kelsey as the flex because I thought, hey, we have two. I mean, I know you don't want to do that for lack of upside, but if we can find two tight ends here that are more or less wide receivers as it is Kelsey and RSJ. So I don't think we need to go that route these days with the running back options available. But hey, I think that's an option for tournaments, though. If you wanted to go Kelsey and Andrews, Kelsey and RSJ, like this would be the week, I think, based on all the savings we have at tight end to double it up.
A couple other tight ends I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping at straws here, but Hunter Henry, he's running all the routes. Jonnu Smith is not. Although I did see some quotes that say everyone's like Jonnu Smith's week's coming. Well, it cannot be Jonnu Smith if he's running like six routes a week. That's just, it's not going to be Jonnu Smith week. It's Hunter Henry who's running the routes. Still not a ton, but he does seem to be the tight end that you want for fantasy over in New England. If I like the Cowboys to score some points, we know Jacoby Myers doesn't get into the end zone, so it's Hunter Henry that's going to be scoring the touchdowns. I think that's a fun way to run that back. And I guess my just a little bit more leverage off of Daryl Henderson, who I expect to be popular. And you talked about Stafford and how good this Rams passing offense should be this week is Tyler Higbee, who's pretty much laid two eggs since we all rostered him in week three. So he's disappointed us 2 weeks in a row. And if a guy has one bad performance, we'll still go back to him in NFL DFS. But if he has two in a row, we tend to write him off and ownership plummets on that player. That's from me doing the millionaire maker stuff for looking at all those over 3.5, almost 4 years now. So if you're looking for some ultra leverage, ultra low owned tight ends, Tyler Higbee, someone I might want to run back at it, but it really just seems, I hate playing the cheap chalky tight end in tournaments, Ian, but it's Ricky Seals-Jones. There's nothing below him that's interesting. And there's not even really anything until you get to Hunter Henry that's interesting.
Well, and like the rest of the positions, we don't have really good, like if you look sub 4K wide receivers, there's Bryan Edwards, there's like KJ Osborne, but there's no one you feel overwhelmingly good about. And the cheapest running back is Khalil Herbert at 4.6. So again, the quarterback, when we lose McLaurin, likely we're kind of losing Heinicke as well. RSJ, and again, I think Detroit, if you want to go that route on defense, are the two easiest ways to save salary this week, regardless of what position we're talking about.
Yeah, you could Jared Cook dart throw, but that's still 3,200. It's a really bad tight end spot for the cheap ones, which Ricky Seals-Jones, I would normally would not consider him a good tournament play, but I just think if you're saving money he's really just about it. And I would do something goofy in the rest of my lineup.
Again, like he's not your typical like 3K tight end. He's playing every single down. We know he's a talented pass catcher. This isn't like Will Disley, Jack Doyle. Hopefully they like catch one of their two targets in the end zone type of deal. Real quick on the defenses, because I know I've been saying the Lions, that'll probably be the popular cash one. But I do think if you want to, again, try to follow the right game script thing and, you know, get your running backs benefiting from a dominant defensive effort, the top three units by far standing out in terms of getting pressure on guys like we talked about earlier with their running backs, Dalvin Cook and the Vikings defense going up against Darnold. O-line injury still holds the ball a lot. And then also Chuba and the Panthers defense and the same reasoning with Kirk Cousins having those aforementioned issues against pressure. And finally, Josh Jacobs and the Raiders defense going up against Teddy, who has played great this year, but he also still does hold the ball a lot. And that can lead to some of those fantasy-friendly fumble opportunities.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Week 6 edition of the Pro Football Focus Show here on RotoGrinders. Again, if you want to check out Ian's article, The Mismatch Manifesto, you can go find that on Pro Football Focus under the fantasy tab. It's under the fantasy tab, right? Or is it in the general tab?
It's there. It's on my Twitter at iHeartIts as well. So if you all just right. type in Week 6 Fantasy Mismatches on Google, you'll find it in no time.
All right. You can read that for free. Check out Jock Market. Glad to have them doing an ad during the show. And everyone have fun out there. Hopefully you crush it at the sports books and your DFS teams are at the top of tournaments this week. For Ian, I'm Britt. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we out ya.